The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Red Sox just finished a three-game set against the New York Mets, losing all three games in a sweep. They now fall back to 500 at 70-70 on the season, still in third place in the American League East, but now find themselves 5.5 games out of a wild card spot. I'm your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to bug me on Twitter, you can find me at Color of the Iris. Joining me on the show from Broward County, Florida is Nick Diamond. Nick, how you doing?
Not great, but all right at the moment, I guess. You know, just got swept by the Mets. Looks like the Mets could be going to the postseason, but the Red Sox definitely are not.
Definitely a case of two teams going in different directions, for sure, is what you saw in those three games. Where can folks find you on Twitter, Nick?
You guys can find me at N Diamond Media on Twitter.
Sounds good. Also with us on the show from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you?
Well, hate to tell everyone I told you so, but I had the Mets sweeping the Red Sox here. I'm not going to say I was like supremely confident. I mean, the Bayo-Severino game, you know, you could go either way, but I just felt the way the Mets were trending, you know, with momentum, they would win it. And for some reason, I don't know. I thought Houck might get beat, not quite in the way that he did, but so nonetheless, and I actually got the Tigers series exactly right, game for game. Loss, win, win was how I had that one. So I'm on a very unfortunate streak now. Fortunately, we do have the White Sox this weekend. The only scary game, if you want to call it that, is Crochet in the middle of the series. But I can be found on Twitter at CushmanMLB. Terry Talks Sox on Facebook. Terry Talks Sox on TikTok. I've been super active on there, just running my mouth daily. So tons of content there. We're on Instagram, and our in-print content can be found at our Bastards Substack. We did a post yesterday on what we expect the final win totals and standings to be. So go ahead and check that out.
Yep, absolutely. And I think a lot of us are feeling kind of the same way, which is not very optimistic about the way this season's going to end. And by the way, we should mention that currently Seattle is playing the Oakland Athletics. And if they win, by the time this episode comes out, Red Sox will be a full six games out of a wild card spot because Seattle's right behind you. So could be even worse within the matter of another hour or so here. So not looking good. Obviously, the Mets are playing good baseball. So, you know, it's not like you lost to a bad team necessarily, but you lost to a team that should be somewhat equal to you. You know, they're fighting for a wild card spot too. And you go in there and they just completely sweep you. They beat your best pitcher on the last day. So it's not feeling great. And I'll just throw it out there, Nick, I'll start with you. Are the Red Sox dead?
Yes. And they've been dead since the Diamondback series. At this point, like you brought up, looking at the Mariners games, I'm not looking at that. It's over. It's been over. There's nothing to look at anymore. Just we're on to the next season. Let's try to take the positives out of this. Hopefully Bayo can keep the hot streak going. And that's really it right now. It's just hopefully we don't finish in last again at this point.
Terry, how about you? Are the Red Sox dead in your eyes?
Oh, yeah. They're dead. I mean, 22 games left. 5.5 out. You can't come back from that. And you could sweep the White Sox this weekend and still only gain a game. And you're still like a massive mountain to climb. And then at that point, you're 19 games remaining in the season. And before the season started, we all, the five hosts that were on here at the time, Cody and Micah no longer with the crew, but we all gave our picks together on what the number of wins would be. I was at the bottom at 71. So we're at 70 now. So we'll exceed that, you know, probably significantly. The highest was Micah at 76. So the expectations weren't high. And I think we've overachieved, you know, to a degree. But, I mean, there's a chance we still only win 78, 79 by the end of the year. And I just, this was a thought I had earlier. The dumbest executive, Sam Kennedy, picked a GM that I think has turned out to be pretty dumb. And somehow they convinced half of this fan base that this was a believable product. And that fan base, that part of the fan base bought it. I'm like, how did you get hoodwinked by two really dumb executives? It's just, that's just crazy to me. And my Twitter, crickets all week. No haters like lunging at me. It's just been quiet. And I think we probably, I'm surprised we didn't get to this point by early August. So when I say we overachieved, it got us to September with a pulse. And I don't know. I think we're doing the chest compressions right now. But it's, I don't know. I don't even know what to say. It was predictable. The only thing worse than failure is predictable failure. And that's what it was. And that's how it played out.
I think what's really disappointing is that you had a window. Kansas City was trying to give you their wild card spot because they just kept losing. And you were up against teams you could have beat, teams like Detroit, even this Mets team. I know they're playing better baseball, but this is a team you can beat. You should have at least taken 2 out of 3 from the Mets. You should have swept the Tigers, and you didn't do it. You completely cratered. Yeah, they've got the White Sox this weekend, but as you said, like even if they sweep the White Sox, it's not going to make a bit of difference in the grand scheme of things at this point. And then after that, you've got 3 against Houston, 4 against the Yankees, which at that point, they're going to get buried.
It's actually Baltimore, which might be worse.
Baltimore, you're right. I'm sorry. Yeah, it was Baltimore. So yeah, that's actually worse. So it's just, I didn't have high hopes for this season. I forget what my predicted win total was. Might have been 74, somewhere around there, 75. I think they'll finish with closer to 78, 79. And did they overachieve? A little bit. Yeah, I think certainly the starting rotation, the way the pitching went, they overachieved. There are some guys individually who overachieved and had very good years. You know, Willy Abreu was, you know, at one point was definitely in the Rookie of the Year conversation. I think he's probably dropped out of that now. Devers, and up until this last couple of weeks, was having at least a guy who's going to get top 10 MVP votes kind of year. But apart from the, and Jaron Duran, obviously having, you know, an incredible year, but just was never enough. The roster was flawed the whole way through, and the deadline was a complete disaster. They went backwards at the deadline, which, you know, that might have been the greatest failing. So unfortunately, yeah, like you made it interesting a little bit into September, but it's kind of a foregone conclusion at this point. I'm with you guys. I think it's over. I think they're dead.
And you made a good point in your blog post, which again can be found on the Bastard Substack, where waiting for the injured players to come back was going to be was going to be a big thing. Like that was going to be a huge factor in how we get to the postseason. I mean, how's Tristan Casas doing? We're not going to talk about him tonight. He didn't make the list, but how's Casas doing? Slayton as well. I mean, he's not going to make the list either. I mean, he gave up an earned run in that first game and hasn't really looked stellar since he's been back. And we're going to get Story back. So there's your strikeout leader for the remaining 2 weeks. Every narrative that came out of that front office blew up. It didn't come to fruition, and we knew it wouldn't.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, you can only wait for so long in terms of, you know, the injured players. We waited so long to get Casas back. He comes back. He's been fine, but has he been a difference maker? No, not at all. So, and, you know, and then you got people saying, well, you know, they're waiting for Chris Martin at times. Chris Martin had a couple of different IL stints and had to miss some time, and he hasn't been the same. We'll get to him eventually, but it's, you know, just, it wasn't just injuries. And I don't want fans to start using that as an excuse. Well, we were without our star first baseman for half the season. No, that's not why you sucked. That's not why you missed the playoffs. It was much more than that. So, it was really an organizational failure top to bottom this year. So bad roster construction, bad trade deadline, really an awful trade deadline if you really look at it. It just was never going to be enough. And other teams around you did more. And they're the ones that are going to be playing in October while, you know, we're sitting at home. So
we talk about, you know, making trades and stuff, you know, with our big prospects. But do you even trust Breslow to trade? Like, let's just say we've been saying Anthony, and I'm actually, he's kind of like my least touchable at this point. I wouldn't have said that a few months ago. He's the number two prospect in all of baseball right now. Do you guys see that? According to Baseball America. Yep. But let's just say it's Kyle Teal. Like, do you trust him to get a good return on that? Like, that scares the crap out of me. And I would trade Kyle Teal, but that just, I don't know. We're going to be getting into some of this in clown takes anyway.
Yeah, for sure.
Inevitably, something will come up about it, but
it's scary. Yeah, that trade deadline was scary. That first go around with Breslow, like, the amount of players he gave up and what he got back was nowhere near equal. And I know, yeah, they're all Rule 5 guys. They're not really going to be big league players. Who cares? Well, I care a little bit when the return is zero or negative to the point where they're losing you games. Then I sort of care. But, yeah, so I agree with you. Like, even if they do make big moves, it's going to be scary because, again, he's inexperienced. We knew this going in. He's super inexperienced and – I don't know. That's going to be real tough, real scary when November and December roll around and we start hearing about trade rumors, if they even decide to get involved in that. I don't know. I'm not sure I fully trust him.
It's almost like the last place guy in your fantasy league gets to take over your team for a year. And it's like, oh. And last year I correctly had to blow it up at the deadline and get draft picks. And I'm like third right now with a really good chance to win it. And I just couldn't imagine someone screwing that up. And I don't know. It's so bad.
It is. Yeah. Well, and there's more bad to get into. So let's not waste any time. We'll get right into our bottom five for this New York Mets series. Maybe the series that doomed the entire season. So coming in at number five, Terry, you are in the leadoff spot. Who do we got?
That will be the guy who's supposed to be our top right-handed bat, Tyler O'Neill. He did go 3-for-9, which at quick glance doesn't look bad, but he did strike out 4 times. Also had an error in, I want to say that was game 1, or I don't even know if it was scored an error, but he bobbled a ball in the outfield. The game was pretty close at the time, and the fact that he couldn't field it cleanly led to another Mets run coming around, and just wasn't good. He hasn't had a very good month or so since being called up from the since being activated, rather, from the injured list. Just in the last 15 games, hitting 189, struck out 26 out of 53 times. So that's basically a 50% strikeout rate. That blows Bobby Dalbec out of the water in comparison. So just not having a good final stretch here. And, you know, there's been some debate, you know, do you bring him back on a one-year deal? Do you give him the qualifying offer? Do you give him a multi-year deal? And the three of us on this show feel differently, but this final month for him can really change the narrative on what the Red Sox may or may not do with him. And when you're looking at this skid here, losing, I don't know what it is out of the last 14. We've lost 5 out of the last 6. And then if you count that Toronto series, that would be, we won 2 there. So we're what, 3 out of the last 11. And when guys like O'Neill stop being productive, I mean, that's a part of it. That's part of why you're only scoring 1 and 2 runs a game when your best right-handed hitter isn't coming through for you. So O'Neill makes the 5 spot on the bottom 5.
Nick.
My thoughts on O'Neill are kind of the same as always. Realistically, he doesn't have bad numbers, but he doesn't play enough games. He's unclutch in my eyes. All of his home runs seems like garbage time home runs. I would not bring him back, even if it was like 1 year. Let's just say realistically, the only time he would accept a one-year deal would be the qualifying offer, and I think that's too much for him. I think there's better options out there. I don't know if the Red Sox will go out there and fulfill the right-handed bat need, but there are probably better right-handed options out there that you could replace O'Neill with. And at this point, he's not a good defender anymore. He only plays 100 games. Just let him walk, see what you can get out of him, and move on.
Yeah, this was tough for me because I've been advocating to re-sign him this offseason just because when he's hot, he's unstoppable, it seems like. But then he goes through these stretches like he's going through now where he turns back into a strikeout machine. He's not really hitting for power. His defense, everyone said that he was, you know, an above average defender. I think he's very average at this point. Maybe he was really good earlier in his career, but I think at this point he's very average out there in terms of just his range and even his arm, like all of that. So, I think he's costing himself money with this final month. I mean, his average is down to 255. You know, everyone knows about the injury problem. He's never going to shake that because he's had multiple IL stints already this year. So he'll never shake that part. The power output has significantly gone down towards the, you know, the final month and a half of the season. So I think a lot of teams are going to look at him and say, yeah, you're probably like really great in May and June, but other months of the season, we can't rely on you. And especially towards the end of the season, you seem like a guy that's just going to break down and not be there. So in the middle of the season when he was cooking, he was probably earning himself a pretty substantial contract with somebody. Because, again, there's always some stupid team that just is going to overpay for the free agent. But he's costing himself money with this final month. So I don't know if it's the kind of thing where you can get him back cheap because, you know, he'll test the open market and realize there isn't much of a market there. But even at that point, I don't know. I'm starting to change my tune on him at this point because I want the right-handed bat. But if this Christian Campbell is legit down there in AAA and he just keeps smacking home runs and he looks like the next Alfonso Soriano, I'd rather just call him up and have him be your second baseman next year. And that's where you get your right-handed power from. You're stuck with Trevor Story. So he's going to be back probably at the end of this month, and he'll be your shortstop next year. If you bring up Campbell, that's another right-handed bat. I'd rather do that to balance out your lineup than pay for O'Neill at this point. I think I'm now on your guy's side of the street. Like, let him walk. Let him see what he gets in free agency. I don't think it'll be much. I can sort of see him starting to go the Hunter Renfro route, where it's just a one-year deal every year with a different team. Because I think he's at that point now. He's going to be turning 30. And teams look at him and go, we're not going to pay and we're not going to invest in you if you're on the IL half the year and then striking out 200 times. Yeah, the power's great when it's there. But if you can't hold up over the course of a season, we're not investing. So I'm kind of on that trade now. Just let him walk. At least let him test the open market and see if he comes back and says, hey, I'll come back cheap. But I doubt that'll happen. He'll probably just end up walking. He'll sign somewhere else. And I'm at the point now where I don't trust the Red Sox to go out and make a big trade or to spend for that right-handed bat. So if Christian Campbell's the guy, if he's legit, you know, give him a spring training invite next year and see if he wins a second base job. I'd almost rather do that at this point.
I think they're all going to be in spring training next year. Every major prospect. It just hit me right now. You figure they're going to make one significant addition through free agency. You can easily make the case that they don't. Because Story's coming back, so he's in your infield. You could have, if Campbell's not ready, you still got Sogard, who's a right-handed hitter. You would still have Gonzalez. So your infield is set. You know, Casas and Devers on the corners. Then go to your outfield, remove O'Neill. Rafael is going to be in the outfield, I would think. I can't see any scenario, barring Story getting hurt again, that Rafael is coming back into the infield. I just don't see it. And he and Duran, they're going to want to be in the 162 club again. Performance will have to dictate that. And Duran won't have a problem with that, but maybe Rafael would. He didn't start. Cora's been benching him, basically, to get better matchups. He didn't play in the finale today, but still, you have to plan on him getting most of the starts out there and Duran. So then you got Ref Snyder, who's got a team option for $2 million if he doesn't retire. You got him and Abreu platooning right field with Anthony waiting in the wings. Yoshida's blocking DH, and he doesn't make the top with the bottom five this week, but he wasn't great and he has been kind of in the cooler. He's 2-for-11. But when Yoshida was on that insane run, I'm like, man, keep it up. Because if he keeps it up, the trade value goes up and maybe you can get rid of the contract. You won't get much in return, but maybe you can get rid of the contract. But where in all of that is a key free agent coming in?
Yeah, and that's just why I'm starting to think now they're not going to be aggressive in the offseason. They'll make some moves. I think they will have to get another infielder. You know, it can't just be Sogard, Gonzalez, Valdez. Like,
well, you got Grissom. Combo. You got Grissom. I don't see where it's coming from.
Yeah.
Unless like a bold trade happens, but he's not the guy that's going to do it. Like he is like scared. Like I won't go on certain roller coasters, and that's a scary roller coaster for Breslow. You know what I mean? Having to trade a serious player, and it's just not going to happen. Man, just, and then think about it. And then we were talking before the show, I'm like, well, maybe Giolito and Priester are your additions next year. Maybe that's all that happens. And I just said in the last show, I said, payroll is going to be at $154 million. That's what we have committed for next year. And I said, we might not go north of two. And here it is.
It would not shock me. Yeah. I mean, it. You know, they'll probably let Pivetta go at this point. So they'll have to replace his arm in the rotation. They will have to at least sign somebody. But if anyone's thinking that, you know, oh, Corbin Burns or, you know, one of these other top pitchers on the market, no shot. It's going to be a guy way down the list. It's going to be a guy who's in his mid-30s who they can sign to just a, you know, two-year deal with an option, and that's it. It's going to be – and they're going to tell you, well, we've already got a 1-2 in Houck and Crawford, so we didn't feel like we needed to go top of the market for pitching. And, you know, we're getting Giolito back, and when he's healthy, he's a solid three at you know, at least, and maybe even a, you know, a high-end three. So really, and then we've got Bayo. All we needed was one more guy. So it's, yeah, don't expect any fireworks on either side, pitching or offense.
If we go the old and busted route, there's two names that are so painfully obvious that could come to Boston. Max Scherzer, Justin Verlander on a one-year deal. And they'll try to sell it. Neither one of them can stay on the field. Verlander's pitching very well. He's just not staying on the field. Scherzer, he's been scuffling and just can't stay healthy. He's been and getting hurt more frequently. But I guarantee you that's how they'll try to patch it for a year. They'll bring in one of those guys and just sell you on the name.
Yeah.
I think it'll be Walker Buehler, who has stunk all year, who's young still, but has been hurt. And I think that's the kind of guy they'll go with. And he's probably cooked, to be honest.
You think so?
No. Yeah, I think he's done. When he came up, he reminded me of Tim Lincecum so much. And as soon as he kind of had the same career path as Tim Lincecum, he had like three elite years and just fell off out of nowhere. I think he just has like a small body, a lot of torque in his delivery, and he kind of just fell off and just lost the strike zone. When he does throw it over the plate, it's right down the middle. I think that's kind of a option they'll go with. A guy that was great in the past, and they think they can Andrew Bailey fix him, and we'll see if that works. I doubt it.
Yeah. I mean, he's definitely a name, and he is under 30 at least, so he wouldn't be the old washed-up route that, you know, Scherzer and Verlander are, but
I haven't, you know, followed the Dodgers a lot this year. I mean, you see Ohtani come up and Mookie and all that in the highlight reels, but I wasn't sure that Buehler had fallen off. And another guy we've brought up before is Reed Detmers. That I think that would be a sneaky move if you could do that, but I think Andrew Bailey's a mess right now too. So, but having said that, I mean, Bayo's turned it around. Houck kind of was. Crawford sort of is. So we'll see. We'll see where that goes. With Bayo, I think I said it on the last show, they took away his four-seamer in the first half of the year. Said, yeah, we're not a fastball team anymore, so you're not throwing that. And then gradually they've been giving it back to him, and he's pitched okay. So I think we're getting away from the one-size-fits-all program that I was complaining about, a month or so ago. But still, I mean, if we're bringing in the reclamation project, I would still be a little nervous about Andrew Bailey tackling that.
Yeah, I agree, definitely. Speaking of old and maybe washed up, coming in number four on our bottom five, Nick, who do we got?
So on number four, I got Kenley Jansen here. You know, he came in tonight's game three. He gave up four runs. He walked three of them. The one cool thing he did was struck out Pete Alonso, who did crack his bat over his knee. But in the end, that didn't matter. The Mets blew it open. Kenley Jansen can only get one out and was that strikeout. And then Rich Hill came in and decided to walk in all of his runs. So that entire ninth inning, actually, it was the eighth inning. Another thing we could bring up is Kenley Jansen pitching any other inning besides the ninth or a save situation is just terrible. And kind of since the All-Star break, Kenley Jansen's not been great. And for the season ERA, his ERA is up to 3.70, where I think only about a month ago was under three. So he's kind of given up a lot of runs recently. Couldn't find the strike zone at all in a non-save situation and just flat out stunk. I know he hasn't pitched in a while, but there's no reason to even bring him into that game at this point. I mean, we're out of it. We were out of it before this loss. It didn't matter.
Terry.
I think it was actually only a week ago he had a 2.9-something ERA, and now it's up to, I think, 3.70, something like that. So it's almost gone up a full point, and I'm not sure why, really. I guess it's just the vibe right now. Like, just the team is just collectively in some type of a rut right now, and it just seems to be contagious. It seems to have swept through most of the clubhouse. So the only guy who's been immune to it so far, I guess, would be Duran, who was 4-for-11 in the series, a couple of runs batted in, no home runs, but yeah, I mean, and with Jansen, I think he's fine. I think he'll still pitch out the rest of the season productively. I don't know how many save opportunities he's going to have, but it was a little weird. I mean, why was he pitching the eighth inning?
I think it's just Alex Cora overmanaging, trying to push the right buttons, and he pushed the wrong button. And this is what he does sometimes. Like, when Cora gets desperate, he tends to think he's, like, smarter than the game itself. And, you know, it's like the other night when he put Ref Snyder in the leadoff spot and Duran second, even though Duran's been leading off the entire year and, you know, was moving Devers around. It's like he's just trying, and it's his way of being like, see, guys, I'm trying. But it's like, it just doesn't work when he does it. It's weird. It's an Alex Cora desperation move.
Yeah, I couldn't figure it out. And I mean, I don't know who was better to pitch the eighth. I mean, you probably weren't going back to Martin after last night. So he was out. I don't know who you had. You had already pitched Kelly and Slayton. Maybe you could have given it to Weissert and then brought him in the ninth, but it wouldn't have been a save situation, most likely. I mean, the Mets were ahead. They were up by one, and it just all went to hell after that. But, yeah, not a good finale for Jansen, and not a good last week, really, as well. He's just been getting hit.
Yeah, he's got an ERA north of six in the last 2 weeks, so... And this is a guy that when the team doesn't do well and, you know, they're sort of out of it, he tends to, you know, mope a little bit. And I think that he doesn't perform to the highest level. So I think he probably, you know, was hoping that they were going to really make a push for the wild card. And, you know, then the trade deadline happens. These new guys to the bullpen come in. They both suck and then they both get hurt. And then the Red Sox just start going on losing streaks. And so he's looking at it like, you got to be kidding me. Another year. So this is second year in Boston, second year wasted where I'm not going to be pitching playoff baseball. You kidding me? So, because I think Kenley at this point in his career wants to pitch in the postseason. That's, you know, he doesn't have many years left and he's already in the record books. As we've talked about, he's probably already a Hall of Famer whenever he retires. So at this point, he wants just another run. He wants another chance at a ring and he's not getting any younger. He signed with Boston this two-year contract because he believed that, you know, the pieces were there and he thought, yep, sure. It's a good organization. And if, you know, if we're close, they'll add, they'll spend the money and we'll get there. And none of that happened in either of the 2 years that he was here. So I think he's just completely checked out. He is done. He's just counting. He's like waking up every day, looking at the calendar being like, when is this godforsaken season over so I can start my free agency plans? So I think that's what you're getting out of Kenley now. You're getting the Kenley that's just checked out and is already talking to his agent about how quickly can we start, you know, putting together a list of where I can go next year because it ain't going to be here. I ain't coming back here.
He's probably got his deal already worked out with the Dodgers. Yep. Whatever the first day was. And just to be thorough here, I think it was just last week Nick mentioned if it was possible or worth it. I forget exactly how he framed it on if Kenley could get the qualifying offer. And I really dove into that. I'm like, wow, geez, that maybe he could. You could make the case. And he still hadn't quite had this full terrible week yet at that point. And but as it turns out, he and I only found this out yesterday, he can't be, because you, according to the collective bargaining agreement, you can only be offered that once. So, and he already has. So that won't be an option. If the Red Sox wanted to bring him back on a one-year deal, they would just simply have to, A, convince him that it's a good idea, and B, probably be the top bidder for 1 year. But I think he could get two. I think there is a two-year deal for him out there.
Oh, I agree. I think that, I mean, he'll be 37, so he's up there. But, I mean, he was dominant through stretches this season. So it's I don't think he's dropped off. The velocity is still there. His stuff is still there. He's actually stayed healthy pretty much the whole time that he's been here. So, yeah, I think there is a market for a two-year deal, or at the very least, 2 years. One of them's an option. But I think the right team would give him a two-year deal, and he would absolutely be seeking that. So, yeah, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility at all. I could see him getting multiple years. But it sure as hell won't be here. he is done. He is out of here. So I think that's kind of what you're seeing from him these last couple of weeks. Another guy, we're kind of in the over-the-hill segment of the bottom five here. Terry, who do we got coming in at number three?
I see what you did there. That's going to be Rich Hill, Dick Mountain, if that name resonates better with you. Man, he had one good appearance with the Tigers series, and it's gone all downhill. He got thumped in the final game of that series against Detroit. And then today, in the, what was that? Looks like it was the seventh inning. He came in after Kenley. Kenley didn't have it. Kenley wasn't throwing strikes. Rich Hill comes in. He doesn't throw strikes. And talking about cooked, Hill just doesn't. I mean, it's a good thing he's only pitching a month, right? I mean, you couldn't, your sanity could not take this for a full season. And it just didn't look like he had his command. And I feel like even if he is commanding, the guys in the batter's box, they just have to wait for the right 70-mile-an-hour pitch. They're just going to sit on him. Rich Hill isn't going to be painting the corners. He's not going to be messing with their timing. There's no mystery to Rich Hill. You're just hoping every time out there he doesn't get slaughtered. And I don't really see the value of keeping him on the team. I even wondered, I'm like, could he get DFA'd after this game? Is that a possibility? And I don't think they're going to do it because of the optics. A, it's just, it would look weird. And B, it would almost be like Breslow is admitting he was stupid for even doing it to begin with. And it's just a bad science project. The dude's 44 years old. He could do this in a Cape Cod league somewhere if he doesn't want to let go of the game, but he's not a major league pitcher at this point. I would say at this point in his career, but it's more like at this point in his life, he's just not a major league pitcher.
Nick, thoughts on Rich Hill?
There's only one thought, and there's absolutely no reason he's still taking innings from anyone else in this organization. I'd rather see some single-A pitcher pitch that I've never heard of before at this point. There's no reason almost 45-year-old Rich Hill needs to throw 80 miles per hour up there. It's just, there's no reason for it. It's kind of embarrassing at this point. You're watching him walk in runs, and he can't even hit the strike zone at 80 miles per hour. Like, what are we doing? What are we – We might as well have Dom Smith out there at this point. He did a better job, and I'd rather – like, we got Mickey Gasper on this team for what reason? Let him pitch. Like, I'd rather see Mickey Gasper on the mound over Rich Hill at this point.
I mean, embarrassing is the right word for it, and I don't want to be too hard on Rich Hill. The guy is just, you know, trying to make a living. I mean, I would have taken the money, too, if I was in his shoes. Like, okay, yeah, I'll just go up there, toss some Frisbees on the mound for the Red Sox. This team sucks anyway, so how much worse can I make it? But it is. It's embarrassing that, you know, their starting rotation could have used a boost at the deadline. They didn't do it. Look at all the other teams around them. Look at all the pitchers that moved. Jack Flaherty, Yusei Kikuchi, you know, Zach Eflin. I mean, teams around you did what you couldn't do. They're like, hey, we could use some more pitching, because if you're in a playoff race and you're serious about it, you know that you can never have enough pitching. All these other teams went out and got pitching. You went out and got Lucas Sims, Luis Garcia, and a catcher. That was your deadline. And it forces you, because you had injuries along the way and, you know, your depth got thin, that you had to reach out to Rich Hill, pull him away from his kids, you know, baseball practice or whatever the hell he was doing, coaching his baseball team. Say, hey, we need you. Get ready, because we need you to go out there and eat some innings, because we have absolutely nobody. And we have absolutely no pitching depth in our system, because we don't draft pitching, because we're a stupid organization. That's what it comes down to. They didn't have anyone in their system who was ready for a call-up who could have done better than Rich Hill. That is embarrassing for any major league organization. You don't have one guy in AAA who can pitch better than 44-year-old semi-retired Rich Hill. That's how thin you are. That's a joke. So I don't ever want to hear anyone from the other side of Red Sox Twitter tell me, no, they have pitching depth. You just don't see it because you guys don't pay attention. No, they don't have any pitching depth. None. All of their good young pitching is in like high A or is in double A. They're not ready for the big leagues yet. And that's embarrassing for a team that wants to contend, or at least claims they want to contend. To not have anything like that is a joke. It's an absolute joke. So this is more about the organization than it really is about Rich Hill, but this is where you are. You were fighting for your life these last couple of weeks to stay in it, to stay in that wild card race. And Rich Hill is out there pitching in clutch situations for you. And look how that went. So again, it's just another reason to just look at the front office and ask, what the hell are you guys doing? And do you even know what you're doing? Because every other team that was in a playoff race and was serious about going went out and got pitching. Starting pitching, not just bullpen help. They got starting pitchers. You didn't get one. And look, I know prices are high at the deadline, right? Every price gets jacked up. I get that. But do you want to make the playoffs? Do you want to at least try to win? Or is it just, nah, let's give them minimum effort. Let's go get Rich Hill for, you know, whatever they ended up paying him. Like, it's just embarrassing that that's where you are. And that's, you know, the kind of decisions that this organization would rather make. And again, it's just, it goes back to the years and years of Bloom just being too afraid to ever draft a pitcher. Because, oh, well, drafting pitching is risky. They could get hurt. So give me 18 more shortstops, because we can trade them for pitching. Not that he's going to, him or Breslow, but that was the idea, apparently. It's just, I don't know. That was just an embodiment of, like, just how badly this roster was constructed this year. That's where we are. Rich Hill pitching important games for you in September. It's gross.
Wow. Almost lost the everything here. I thought my laptop was charging. It is now, though. But question for you guys. Did Alex Cora kind of miss an opportunity to stick it to Breslow by pulling Rich Hill out of there? Because I would have thought, oh, man, just leave him in there. Just let it burn. And, you know, because, I mean, it was, the game was over. It was 8-3 by the time he came out. So I don't know. I would have just left him in there and said, as if to say, okay, Brez, you had to have this guy back. It was predictable. We knew this is about who he would be. So let's just watch him get teed off on. But he got him out of there, and then who came in? I think it was Weissert. Yeah, Weissert finished out the inning. That whole inning was so catastrophic. Jansen only got one out. Rich Hill only gets one out. And five runs come in? Four runs? Something like that. And then Cora has to turn to Weissert. But I'd have just let him out there. Let him cook. Send a message. Because at this point, you need something different to happen. It's probably not going to happen this winter, but eventually you got to get sick of these Septembers. And I don't know how Cora puts up with it, really.
I think the only reason he didn't do that is because Cora likes Rich Hill, like, as a person. He didn't want a Kyle Barraclough, but I could see, like, if Lucas Sims or Luis Garcia ever comes off the IL before the season's over and they come in for, like, mop-up duty and they're getting smacked around, one of those guys would be the one that Cora leaves out there for a little extra long, you know, to give up, like, five or six. Because, oh, these are the guys you brought me? Nice job, Craig. Look at how that's going. So I think that that's more – those are the type of guys that he would do it to. The Kyle Barraclaughs, the – Lucas Sims. I think he has too much respect for Rich Hill to let him sit out there and suffer. But yeah, I think a game like that is coming. The Alex Cora FU game is coming, because pretty soon they're going to officially be out of it, and he's going to do that. There's going to be one game where he just manages like he doesn't give an F. And it'll probably be at home so that Brezel can see it up close and personal, you know, in his nice little box up there. But yeah, the Alex Cora FU game is coming. There's always at least one in September when they're out of it. So he's due. It'll come. So
I completely agree there. I really did want it to happen to Rich Hill, but Rich Hill is basically the same age as Alex Cora. I think they played together. Right? It's not going to do it to each other at this point. Like you said, Kyle Barraclough or Lucas Sims, absolutely let them give up 8, 10, 15 runs. Who cares? But I think it's coming, and I'm excited for it. I think it's going to come. And I'm wondering who it's going to be, if it's Josh Winkowski or it's Cooper Criswell or whoever they put out there to give up 10 runs, because it's coming. There's going to be a reliever who stinks coming soon, and I can't wait.
I wonder – I don't know how I'm going to pick this White Sox series yet, but – I mean, if you only come out with one win in that series, then you have to figure, I don't know, it could be that game. You got Baltimore right after, so we'll see.
Yeah, for sure. It's coming. It'll be Chase Sugar or someone. Like, call him back up to be the sacrificial lamb
for
that
game.
Oh, he's
up. He was one of the two moves. He was one
of
the
two. Oh,
there
you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's already preparing for it. Yeah. Sorry, Chase, you're going to be the guy.
It'll probably be Keller again, since they re-signed him for like the 30th time. He'll find his way back up.
That actually would be very fitting. Yeah, it should be Brad Keller. Yeah.
It's the only move Breslow has. You know, just go get Brad Keller.
That's his pitching depth. Goes and acquires Dick Fitz and Priester, but only wants to call up Brad Keller.
Yep.
Fitz actually had a good outing for a change, but... That's timeout.
Yeah. But hey, why call him up when you can sign Rich Hill and Brad Keller? I mean, that's just a much better thing to do. Speaking of that pitching depth, and a guy who disappointed us in this series as well, coming in at number two on our bottom five, it's Tanner Houck. And he's did settle down eventually in this start. So the first inning was a disaster. Again, command wasn't there. Ends up loading the bases, and then was able to get Pete Alonso out, which was huge, but then gives up the grand slam to Jesse Winker. Sox go down 4-0 right there in the first, and that was just, you knew it. It's like, this game's over. The way this team's going with, you know, the comments from the night before about the clubhouse having a funeral-like type of atmosphere to it, going down 4-0 in the first inning with your best pitcher on the mound, not a recipe for success. So rough outing for Hauk. Again, he did settle down. He ended up going 5, struck out 7. But, you know, he's now 8-10 on the year. And this is another guy that, yeah, he's going to be in the rotation next year, and I feel pretty good about him. But I kind of stop short when people say, oh, there's your ace. I'm like, well, he's not an ace. He's your ace because you have nothing else. But Tanner Houck on any other contending team is like a number 3, maybe a number 2, depending. But that's where you are pitching-wise. Tanner Houck is considered your ace. And he's a good pitcher. I don't think he's a great pitcher. Again, I think any other contending team, he's a number 3. Would he make playoff starts? Probably. But he's not going to be the guy getting the ball in game 1. He's not the kind of guy you give the ball to in a game 7. He's just a good, solid pitcher who generally doesn't get in trouble, generally keeps you in ball games. But he's not an ace. And this team hasn't had a true ace in a long time. Not since that one year that Chris Sale was, you know, healthy. Like, you know, and I hope he enjoys his Cy Young Award, as a side note. That's going to look real shiny in his cabinet after this season. But that's just not, that's not who Tanner Houck is ever going to be. So it's just a lot to put on him when, you know, it's him and it's Crawford. And then, you know, Crawford is kind of a question mark. Bayo is a question mark. Like, the whole rotation just doesn't fill you with a lot of confidence. And that's why we, when we talk about the offseason and them not being aggressive, it's going to come back and bite them if they're not. Because I think Tanner Houck could potentially regress a little bit next year. I'm not telling you he's going to suck, but would I be shocked if Tanner Houck ends with like a record sort of like 9-13, but his ERA is more in the mid-4s and he's not striking guys out as much and the command just isn't quite there? I just think that you kind of got like this, I don't know, this flash in the pan earlier this year where he was like, you know, what, right up there with Seth Lugo in terms of like the early Cy Young race. It was like him, Lugo, and Skubal were the 3 guys that people were considering. And then the year went on and Houck just looked a little more human. Every start, he just looked a little more human. And towards the end here, it's like he's, the command isn't there and he's not missing bats. And he's starting to give up the long ball more. That's just something to be concerned about. So again, like, he'll be in your rotation next year. He'll probably be your opening day starter because they're not going to go out and get anybody else. But just be careful with Houck. Like, yes, he's technically your ace, but he's not an ace pitcher. So expecting that from him next year, I think, is a little too much. Nick, what are your thoughts on Tanner Houck?
I mean, you can never go down 4-0 in the first inning. I mean, if you take his whole outing, he really didn't pitch horribly. It was the first inning. He was bad. He gave up a grand slam, a winker. But he settled down after that. I actually kind of wanted to see him go 6th inning, you know? And then I think Terry brought it up earlier about trying to get to that 8th inning and not have Kenley pitch the 8th inning. Maybe if you had Houck go the 6th, I think he was at like 80-something pitches. So you could have had Houck and then Slayton and then – you know, you wouldn't have had to use Kenley in the 8th inning there. We might have been able to keep the game to 1-run game. But, you know, Tanner Houck as a whole, I think he's a 2, maybe a 3. He's not an ace. You know, I think he will regress. But if we're looking at the team as a whole, I think a lot of players on this team will regress. I don't think Duran's going to put up a 10 war season ever again. When's the last time a Red Sox player has put up 10 war? I don't think Jacoby Ellsbury put that up in 2011. So I think we're going to have a lot of regression coming around. I think there will be other players that come up and the team does get better in other ways, but this team's not going anywhere unless they go to acquire somebody better than Tanner Houck, and I don't see that happening.
Terry.
So outside of the first inning, which you guys have touched on, second inning, it was 3-3 down, 3 Mets batters up, 3 Mets batters down. 3rd inning, 3-3 down. 4th inning, 3-3 down. So no one got on base again until the 5th inning. And then he gets a strikeout right away of Alvarez, who was on a terrible slump until just, I think, yesterday. And then he got a pop out. So he's two outs into that fifth inning. And finally, Francisco Lindor hits a double. And then Nimmo singles, but Lindor's held at third. And then Mark Vientos gets the ground out. So Hauk gets out of the inning, you know, labored a little bit there. Really, what it came down to in that first inning was he didn't have command. I mean, he issued a walk almost right away. I forget which at bat that was. Let's see. First or second at bat was a walk. Where are we? So, okay. So Lindor singled and then Nimmo walked. But the theme of the inning was Hauk wasn't throwing strikes, and he was behind in the count. And, you know, the Mets offense just kind of went off a little bit. Vientos hit a single, and that loaded the bases. And Winker hit the grand slam, and we don't see a ton of games, you know, at Citi Field, so I didn't know what the ground rules were there. Initially, I'm thinking, okay, it's a wall ball. Wasn't fielded good, and the bases were going to clear. So I thought three were coming in, but it was above that line, and, you know, it was a grand slam. And Duran, I'm not saying he necessarily could have caught that. Maybe an elite outfielder could have if they took a better route. A couple of times this series, Duran didn't take the best route, I guess. It hurt him in game one. And I don't know. It would have been a tough play to make. But nonetheless, not a good inning for Hauk. And it was fitting. I mean, it was a dumpster fire series. First inning, your best pitcher. Theoretically, your best chance to win, especially when you got a guy like McGill that you're facing who hasn't pitched well for the Mets. So you're looking at this as the most winnable game, and the way the entire series went with the lack of offense, Martin getting absolutely tuned up the night before. Of course, Hauk was going to give up a four spot right away and put us in that hole. And, you know, the Red Sox got three back and had a chance to maybe make a game of it. But that offense just can't get it together. Devers, Casas, Yoshida all had a quiet series. And not a great one for Hauk. And let me say this, too. He will regress, like you guys said. I don't think he's going to have a bad year necessarily next year, but he could have an upper threes, lower four ERA. Hopefully he'll be healthy. I mean, that's the one thing I'm always going to hope for with these guys. You know, if they can stay healthy, you can kind of work on the other things. But I mentioned earlier Bayo mixing a four-seamer back in. I really think Hauk needs to mix a fastball back in, because you can't be a finesse guy and consistently get those swings and misses, paint the corners. It's hard to do. You need a fastball to balance out the rest of your arsenal. So if they can address that, I don't want him pumping 98, 99, though, because then he will blow out his arm. But get a solid 95, 96 mile an hour four seamer and kind of tweak your arsenal, your game planning on how you're going to attack these guys. And I think he'll be a little bit more effective that way. But right now, patience from the other team in the batter's box is going to be Hauk's kryptonite.
Yeah, exactly. I think now hitters are starting to just sit. And they're saying, okay, well, he's never going to throw me 96 on the black, right? He's always going to throw a pitch with some movement. So I'm just going to sit back and see where it moves. And, you know, I think actually, I forget which game it was, but I feel like there was one game that Hauk was starting where it might have been Middlebrooks was talking about it, where if you're in the box against him, depending on where the pitch starts in your eye level, you know whether to just let it go or whether or not it's going to move back towards you. And that's where they're starting to swing. I feel like he was talking about something like that. And he said, yeah, it's, you know, it's tough when you're a guy like Hauk because he doesn't have just the 98, I'm going to blow you away with it kind of, you know, in his arsenal. So yeah, I think that's something that, you know, it's worked for Bayo to bring that four seamer back. Maybe Hauk needs, you know, something like that, even if it's not a true four seamer, but just something that's not a sinker or a slider, you know, just to mix it up a little bit, because he's now like getting to a point where he's not fooling hitters as much anymore. So yeah, that might be something they have to work with him on in the off season.
And that really started in late June. They adjusted to him and he didn't adjust back. You know, he didn't try to get a step ahead of them again. So, so that's something that needs to be looked at.
Absolutely. Well, with that, we will move to number one on the bottom five. Nick, take us home. Who do we got coming in at number one?
At number one, we got Chris Martin. And Chris Martin gave up four runs. He gave up a bomb to Pete Alonso, four hits. He did get through the inning, but his ERA also skyrocketed up to 3.62. He basically took himself out of the game three, made himself unavailable after having a terrible game two. You know, these are guys we are depending on in the bullpen. We've been waiting the last month or two to get Chris Martin and Slayton back, and Chris Martin stunk. You know, he's not – last year we kind of got comfortable with how good he was. I know he was unbelievably good. He put up almost as good as like Koji did in 2013, not quite that good, but he hasn't been that good this year. He's almost got a four ERA, and it's disappointing to see that he's probably coming to the end of his career now. He's almost 40 years old, and it stinks that this is probably how his career is going to end with the Red Sox, but he was a guy that the Red Sox, you know, leaned upon a lot the last 2 years. So it was nice to have him, but I'm ready for to move on at this point. I want to move into someone younger, whether that's Slayton is going to get that eighth inning role now on or not, but I'm just ready to move on from these guys. I kind of want a new identity on this team.
Terry.
I kind of hear what Nick is saying, because to me, Martin and Jansen will always be Bloom guys to me. And, you know, it was nice to have them, but you didn't have the rotation in front of them to get them as many opportunities as they needed. But wasn't a great series. And I'm kind of surprised the Mets didn't mess with Martin a little bit more. Like, remember, it was, I think at some point in June or July, that one team was bunting on him and it was pissing him off. And Martin ended up, I think, assisting over at first base to get that out, because the hit pulled the first baseman off. It might have been Dom Smith, and Martin got the out, and he just kind of roared, and I think it caused the benches to kind of clear or something. And not long after that, within a handful of days, he went on the injured list with that anxiety problem. And I don't know if the bunts were part of that, you know, if it was just kind of messing with his head a little bit, but no team has tried to exploit that any further since then. And I thought the Mets would be the perfect team to do it, you know, very veteran laden, and, you know, and they've got a manager there, Mendoza, he's a first year manager, and I don't know, he might have had some tricks up his sleeve, but nonetheless, I mean, Martin, just terrible. Four hits, four earned. He didn't walk anyone, but we'll see. I still might take him back next year, you know, on the right deal, but I don't know if it's critical right now.
Yeah, I remember that series that you were talking about. It was against Milwaukee. That they were bunting on him, because
that's
Milwaukee
right.
Always has been a pesky, annoying bunting team with guys who have, like, you know, incredible speed. So they were the ones exploiting it. And
it was their actually first base coach. Now you've jogged my memory.
Yeah, it was Quentin Berry, their first base coach, who got a cup of coffee with the Red Sox during his playing career.
Yeah, he was supposed, they put him on the postseason roster. Like, he was going to be the Dave Roberts if we needed him to be.
Yep. That's right. Because he played that way. He had a little bit of speed, you know, played pretty good defense, you know, so I do remember that. And yeah, it's kind of sad to see what's happened to Chris Martin here in the, you know, the final stretch of the season. I mean, you know, he was so reliable last year. I mean, he was just absolute nails, and you felt pretty good about him heading into this year, despite his age. You don't really think about his age. You know, it's, I mean, you see him up there with the, you know, the gray in his hair and everything, but he's so dominant that it's like, who cares? Obviously this year didn't go his way. He had different injuries and he had to, you know, take a leave for, you know, for mental health, and just never really quite got back on track. So definitely disappointing. It's definitely, you know, hurt the team this year that he hasn't been as reliable as he was in 2023. I don't know if I would take him back. I'm kind of with Nick that I'm like, I'm ready to move on. But then again, like, I don't know. I'm so scarred with the Chris Sale thing that, like, Chris Martin could sign with, like, the Yankees this offseason and become their closer and win reliever of the year next year. Like, that's just kind of how I see the Red Sox luck going with pitchers that they let walk. But I mean, if he wanted to come back on a short money deal, would I take him? Probably, just because, you know, it would take short money. That's the only reason this front office is going to add any talent. And I think he has a little bit left in the tank. So we'll see, you know, we'll see what happens with Chris Martin, but tough year for him. It's a tough way for him to end his Red Sox tenure. We'll see what his future holds, but yeah, just another example of a guy that you leaned on pretty hard and it just didn't work out this year. And it's really been the cause of a lot of downfalls, you know, late in games for this team. So it's a shame it had to come to that, but you know, like I said, we'll see what he decides to do this offseason. I imagine he probably still wants to pitch. I don't think that he's going to retire, but you never know. I mean, with the mental health thing, maybe that's catching up with him. Maybe he's just exhausted and wants to just end it, you know, end his career. So I don't know. We'll see, you know, we'll see what he wants to do. But again, like, short money deal, 1 year, $3 million. Sure. He wants to come back. Sure. Make sure he's healthy, you know, and do that. But I think he's going to sign somewhere else. He'll probably go to a contender if he's playing anymore. So we'll see, but obviously not the year that you were hoping from Chris Martin in 2024. So with that, we will wrap up this episode. Keep an eye out for another episode of Clown Takes coming your way on Friday. You may have noticed that we left Rafael Devers alone this episode, even though he's been struggling a lot. We're going to get to him. Rafi Devers versus the Boston beat writers. Which side do we stand on? You'll know on Friday when that episode drops. And then obviously keep an eye out for the series prediction show for the White Sox series. That'll be coming out as well. Then the Weekend Crew will have you guys Monday to recap that White Sox series. So everyone have a good weekend. We'll talk to you later. Take care.